Sprucing up an urban area takes just a bit more than plans and construction crews. There are zoning issues, building codes, money, and a whole lot more that need to come together for redevelopment in cities, even development in the first place. The relationship between building design and tax production is the domain in which the company Urban 3 works. It's based in Asheville, North Carolina, and the boss visits Grants Pass and Medford on Monday to talk about urban projects. Let's delve into the work of Urban 3 and what its people help with. Joseph Minicozzi is the principal of Urban 3 and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
So how did Urban 3 get started, and were there Urbans 1 and 2?
Well, Urban 3 is actually, we initially had in the name of our company, it was a square root, so it was urban cubed. Mm-hmm. And if you think of the urban environment as a three-dimensional environment, so we thought it was cute to be punny and have our name be the square root of urbanism. But we had a really hard time getting that through the IRS process of having a superscript, so we just settled for just dropping the three down into just being regular script. So it's not all that fancy, but that's the story. But our company started, I was working with this real estate investment group called Public Interest Projects, which is a for-profit real estate investor and builder developer in downtown Asheville, North Carolina. And the mission of Public Interest Projects is to make our downtown livable and fix buildings and get people living downtown, but also have the nice stuff on the street, like restaurants and coffee shops and nightclubs and bars, things for people to do in the downtown. The byproduct of it is that our downtown also became successful as a tourism destination. But all of this stuff is rooted in the way that we used to build cities. And our company was, you know, basically while I was still working with Public Interest Projects, I was telling the story of the economics, and people started hiring us to run the economics in their community and see whether or not it worked. The math was the same in their communities, and sure enough, it was. And our company was born from that. So that's kind of how we got started.
Is it the math of financing redevelopment and development, that kind of thing?
It's actually the math of why you should care as a citizen. So we're all shareholders in my case in my city of Asheville in this thing called Asheville, but also our county, Buncombe County. So we pay property taxes to a city and to a county, and both of those are corporations. They have a corporate boundary, they have a board of directors, they have a cash flow. So why should it matter what we're doing from a real estate investment standpoint downtown versus, let's say, a Walmart? And so when you put them side by side, when you put the numbers side by side, and one of the buildings that I use in the example is a six-story old JCPenney's department store that was renovated as a mixed-use building with housing, office, and retail. And that building's $11 million worth of taxable value. Well, that pales in comparison to a Walmart, which is $20 million, and so it's double the value. But it's really not a fair comparison because that mixed-use building is on 0.5 of an acre of land, while that Walmart consumed 34 acres of our city. So on a per-acre basis, when you make them apples to apples, you really start to see the difference of the potency of that small little building downtown is $634,000 of tax production versus Walmart at $6,000 of tax production per acre. So what would you rather have as a taxpayer? Would you rather have $6,000 of tax flow, or would you rather have $600,000 of tax flow?
So you really do potentially get the citizens thinking in terms of being shareholders. Like, come on, we need to get some more value out of this place.
Well, it's not really getting them thinking. It's getting them to realize that they already are. Mm-hmm. Now, you pay taxes. You're a shareholder in a corporation wherever you live. And if you live out in the unincorporated county, you're a shareholder in the county. But if you're in the city or a town, you're a shareholder in two corporations. So it matters. What's good for downtown is great for the city, but it's unbelievable for the county as well because the county reaps those property taxes. Now, for Oregon, y'all don't even get retail taxes, so you can't even make the argument that Walmart at least produces those retail taxes back to you. So you're just getting a really cheap. The reason why Walmarts are so, we use them because everybody's got one. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a control subject or something.
Right.
But they're also really cheap throwaway buildings, and the Walmart Corporation makes no bones about it. They design those buildings to last 15 years. So that building has a useful life of a house cat, you know. But at least we mourn the passing of the house cat. But that building produces very low revenue for you, which is, you know, and it's not to fault Walmart. They're really smart. They figured out that the cheaper the building they make, the lower the taxes they pay to you. So why should they care?
Mm-hmm. But they also locate on land that's fairly inexpensive in the first place, it sounds like.
Even worse, yeah. Yeah. So yes, I just for our role is as a firm is to just help you all understand that you're participating in this game, and don't hate the player, hate the game. This is a game that you can control. This is your community. These are your taxes, and you need to understand how your development's being built around you and what the cost is. So it's just making, it's, I guess it's called like a tax literacy program or something.
Joe Minicosi is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the principal of Urban 3 based in Asheville, North Carolina, coming to Grants Pass and Medford on Monday. You can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about the value in redeveloping downtown areas, urban areas. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. It seems like, I mean, certainly this information has been available to people. It's just how you're packaging it. Because I come back to the fact that Medford, for example, when it created its urban renewal agency more than 20 years ago, built it on tax increment financing, knowing that values increase and that they can take the difference between old and new value to pay for other development.
Yeah.
Is that a fairly common construction?
Certainly. And then there tends to be, there's oftentimes people get really wound up about tax increment financing because they feel that like that downtown building that's getting the people call it TIF, tax increment financing is the shortened word for it. But people get wound up about TIF because they feel that somebody's getting a get-out-of-jail-free card. They're getting a tax discount, and they are, but that ultimately sunsets. Typically, it's a 12 to 15-year situation. But in the end of that building's going to balloon back to a regular payment. We just want that our recommendation would be that just make sure you're transparent about it. Make sure that you're investing that TIF in the right location. So I'll give you an example. The Liberty Building, or we'll just use the Four Daughters Irish Pub.
Okay, right in downtown Medford. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that building's value per acre is $10 million of value per acre. So if you had an acre of that building, it would be producing $10 million worth of value, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Fred Meyer, by comparison, is $1.3 million. So that Four Daughters Irish Pub is about, what, nine times the potency of your Fred Meyer?
Yeah, easily.
Yeah. Now, let's go with your Costco. Your Costco is $800,000, so it doesn't even break $1 million per acre. So that Four Daughters Irish Pub is like 13 times the potency of your Costco. So if you're going to give TIF, which one would you give it to? Would you give it to the Costco that's already yielding you very low revenue return? Or would you give it to the make more of the Four Daughters Irish Pubs happen, and then eventually when that tax increment dissolves, you'll get $10 million of value per acre? Or let's take it the next step. Why just have a two-story building or a one-story building? Let's go with a three- or four-story building so you get even more density and more potency. So that old JCPenney's department store that I was mentioning in Asheville that's producing $600,000 of taxes per acre, that building's six stories, and it was a building that was built in 1920. So could we just do more of that? I'm not saying build skyscrapers, but just make sure that you're consciously aware of your cash flow of your cities. You know, and oftentimes we just assume that cities just magically happen without running the numbers on it, and it's a big business. You know, it's my city of Asheville is a taxable value is worth $12.8 billion. So if somebody were to go out into a farm field and make Asheville happen, they would need $12.8 billion worth of capital to make it to happen. That's a really expensive project. So how what's the value of Medford? What's the value of Grants Pass? Do you even know that? You know, you're an investor in it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. And what's the population of Asheville, just for comparison's sake?
90,000.
Okay, so a little larger than Medford, and about that make it about three times the size of Grants Pass.
Yeah.
But so what do people do with the information then, Joseph? I mean, once they realize, oh, well, look at the much greater value you get for properties in an urban core, what do they do with the information?
Well, you can call me Joe. I don't need
okay.
to be Joseph. A lot of it is what we do is we just change the way that we talk about buildings. You know, I'm trained as an architect, so I'm not even like, you know, I'm not like some finance expert. But what we're good at is let's just get to the brass tacks of what's creating value here. and also understand that the market isn't a free market. There's a reason why you're getting suburban sprawl and big boxes. It's because the financial mechanisms reward that stuff. So if I build a cheaper building, if I squander more of your real estate, there's a financial incentive for me to do that as a developer, and I take your money in the process because you don't charge me for all the roads that go out there. You don't send me a bill for that. You charge me based on value, which is really weird. Like, think of any other business. If you bought an iPhone, you don't just magically get an iPhone and don't pay for all of the material that goes into the making of that phone. Apple charges you for the aluminum body, the glass screen, all of the software that's in there. There's a cost that starts when you have a business transaction, and that's a cost recovery. We don't do that with cities. We just hope that it works out. We're operating on 17th century tax policy. It's really kind of bizarre. And people say to me, they're like, well, how is it nobody's kind of gotten onto this? And I think I struggle with it myself because it seems so obvious when you start talking about it. And sometimes the obvious stuff takes a while to sink in. And the analogy that I use is, you remember a time before we had wheels on luggage, right? You remember the O.J. Simpson
commercial?
Yeah, I do,
yes. I'm running through airports. Yeah.
So a pilot patented putting wheels on luggage in, I think it was 1972. That was the first time wheels got put on luggage, and that patent expired in 1992, and that's when all of us started seeing wheels on luggage, so it wasn't until the 90s. We actually put a man on the moon before we put wheels on luggage. Like, is it that hard to figure out how to put a wheel on? Like, we didn't know what a wheel was? You know, so sometimes the obvious stuff, it takes a paradigm shift, and I see this when I go around to different communities. I see people's light bulbs go off, and they're like, wait a minute, this is way too easy. It's like, yeah, so it's putting wheels on luggage. So
we're talking to Joseph Minicozzi here on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the principal of Urban 3 in Asheville, North Carolina, which makes plain to cities where there is value in redevelopment, and it's often in downtown core areas. He'll be coming to Grants Pass and Medford for talks on Monday. The Grants Pass talk, 11:45 to 1 at the Grants Pass City Council Chambers, 4 to 6 at the Medford Public Library, same day. You can join the conversation on the Exchange right now at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. This being a radio interview, we're missing one critical element of the work you do, and your property values represented in 3D are rather shocking. I mean, when you look at the very tall piles of value coming out of these fairly narrow lots in downtown areas.
Yeah, picture's worth a thousand words. You know, we use those models. One is it really clearly and visually drives the point home, and it helps. Regular people who don't deal with this stuff on a daily basis understand why does it matter for them. You know, in defense of the citizen, it's like, you know, you generally only know your own tax bill. You don't know what people in the downtown pay. You don't know, you might even know what your neighbors pay, but often you don't. So you don't have the context to understand how it all fits in. So you know we're all sort of tragically limited in understanding of how cities operate. You know, on the flip side, this is what I've been doing for 20-something years. This is what I've been trained to do, and so I see the city completely differently. So using those pictures is a way to help you all, or the general population, understand what we see at an economic level. So we just put it on a map. But you know, if you're familiar with Grants Pass, there's a little Victorian building that's on the corner of Southwest Fifth Street. It's got this cool little cupola on top of it. It's blue with like red pinstriping on it.
Fifth and G, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know if you know the name of that building, but if you just had 2 acres of that building, it would equal the entire 19-acre Walmart. So, what would you rather have? 2 acres of that Victorian building or that 19-acre Walmart? And you know, which one would you put on a postcard? Let's just start there. And
uh-huh.
You know, would you put the Walmart on a postcard? So are you adding value to your community? And there's design value, there's aesthetic value, there's things, buildings that you could have a sense of pride in. And oftentimes people say to me, like, well, Joe, that's fine, but we need that Walmart for cheap goods. And it's like, well, fair enough, that's true. They provide you cheap goods, but how did they get there? How are you making it more efficient for them to deliver you that cheap good? And isn't it worth it for you to get toilet paper at 10 cents a roll cheaper for that loss of your community value? Just be aware of that exchange, because there is a financial exchange that's happening that gives them a leg up to participate in your community. And just make sure you account for that.
So you mentioned, Joe, that we're still using essentially 17th century tax policy. How would, tax policy alone, if that were to change, what would you recommend it become?
It's every city's got to work it out themselves. You all adopted, I'm just going to say this about Oregon. I don't know what you guys did with the, you adopted California's Prop 13 model, but you perverted it in a really strange way.
Under Measure 5, the property tax rate reduction and then property tax value reduction later on.
Yeah, and that's just, come on now. It's like you have to run a financial industry and then you just, you paralyze yourself. So there's absolutely no incentive at a financial level. You've made it easier to do suburban sprawl, which is kind of weird because you guys also have growth boundaries in your state. Mm-hmm. So you've got a finite container, and you set up financial mechanisms to waste and squander that asset. So think of it in any other way. If you have a finite commodity, like let's say diamonds, do you give a discount when you get a bigger diamond? Of course not. It's like the bigger the diamond, the more expensive it is. Yet in your tax system, you have the direct opposite. You actually reward folks that squander your finite asset. And it's just, hey, you might want to wake up to that, And it's so I understand why people adopted Prop 13, and it's a feel-good bumper sticker kind of thing. I was like, well, let's go ahead and freeze my taxes. It's like, all right, well, what does it cost our community? How does this impact my kids and my grandkids? Because they're going to get stuck with the bill of all of this stuff. And this is something no one thought out in the 1970s and 80s when you were adopting these policies. So maybe it's time to have a conversation about that. I don't know. I mean, it's your community. Mm-hmm. As far as taxes, in our work, we do work in all over the country and also in Canada and New Zealand and Australia. And it's interesting that we all came from the same mom. We all came from England, and we all adopted England's tax system when we came across the ocean. But it's kind of fascinating to me as an American. We were the first ones that ran away from mom, right? We had a tax revolt, ironically,
right. Yes.
through our tea in the harbor, and we didn't change our taxes, not nearly the level that the Canadians and the New Zealanders did. And so it's fascinating for us to look at our cousins over there, and their tax system is like a soundboard in our nightclub or something like that, and the American tax system is like a 1970s equalizer with like four buttons on it. Our tax system is incredibly crude by comparison, and it's like how other places have figured this out. But I don't know. I mean, it's just pessimistically, nationally, we're having a real hard time. We develop these political camps, and we don't think through the details of what we're really dealing with and what we're running. And I think that's the harder part that, I guess I'm feeling a little pessimistic because of our national dialogue. Mm-hmm. It's hard at a local level. We can actually get our hands around it. Yet we still take these theatrical roles toward a political conversation. I think that there's land value taxation as a policy. Have you ever heard of land value taxation?
No.
Henry George in the 1800s threw this idea out there of why do you tax people on value, why don't you tax them on location? And if you tax on value, the reason why that little Victorian building is so productive is because it's a really cool building. It's got a lot of woodwork on it. It's very valuable. And the reason why the Walmart's so unproductive is because it's just tilt up concrete with metal panels. It's really cheap. So he's like, why do we tax on value? There's a perverse incentive to build crappy architecture. We should tax on location because that is more true to infrastructure. Additionally, in the 1800s in the East Coast, when he promoted this policy, worse than the Walmart is the land speculator. It's the person that has a surface parking lot in the downtown. There's very little value there, right? It's just asphalt. So the tax assessor goes out there and goes, well, it's not being used that much, so it's just asphalt. It's a replacement value. That is nothing. So the tax value of that property is really, really low. But you all, as shareholders, have invested a tremendous amount of infrastructure at that front door of that property. So Henry George is like, why don't we penalize these speculators? They're essentially sitting on land when we can infill and pay and recoup the cost of all of our investment of our streets and sidewalks and police departments and garbage trucks and everything else that goes by this property. we've put our investment in. Why is that person paying the lowest tax rate? So it's basically just turns the whole tax system, just flips it around to functioning more like an investment return.
How long? And, go ahead, finish up.
Well, so anyway, it's hard to get adults to want to change policy. So there's a Georgist, her name is Elizabeth Maggie Phillips, and she's like, you know what, I'm not even going to bother trying to promote this policy to adults. I'm going to make a board game for kids. And the board game is Monopoly.
Huh.
So think about Monopoly. It's like the better sites have better value, like Broadway's worth more than Mediterranean. But yeah. When you assemble lands, it gets really good, and when you put buildings on it, that's how you win the game. She taught us all the policies. Go ahead, sorry.
Are the sessions in Grants Pass and Medford open to the public?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one's okay. I think Medford's at the library, and I don't have my schedule.
Yeah, it's Medford 4 to 6 at the library, and then Grants Pass earlier in the day, 11:45 to 1, to hear from Joseph Minicozzi, who's the principal of Urban 3, and you're hearing some really eye-opening ideas about land values and development and how we make nicer downtowns and better cities. How long did it take Asheville, Joe, to turn around?
It was an instant success that only took 30 years.
Okay, there's the cautionary tale, but one that has got a pretty good ending, at least at the moment. Joe Minicozzi is, again, the principal of Urban 3, coming to Grants Pass, 11:45 to 1, City Council Chambers on Monday that afternoon, 4 to 6 at the Medford Library. Pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Take care. Hope to see you there.
All right, take care.